Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Mem Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 5 lines from the top of Daf Mem Beis. You will notice a bow tie shape marking and an indication that this is number 2. We have a series of Tanaic sources that darshan the pasuk Baal Hashor Noki. We started this description and introduction to this topic in our previous shiur. So without any further ado, let us continue now with the Tanaic source. The Tanaic source refers to a machlokes tanoim between Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Rabbi Akiva concerning a shor, an ox that causes a miscarriage of a human being. Baal Hashor Noki, Rabbi Yosef Glili Omer, Noki Midmei Vlados. The owner of this aggressor animal that caused a woman to miscarry is exempt from paying, from compensating for that loss, the loss of the children, of the child. Omar Lo Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva says you don't need the pasuk of Baal Hashor Noki to teach that point. Harehu Omer, there's a pasuk elsewhere that says ki inotsu anoshim, and you'll find this pasuk in Shmos Perek Chof Aleph pasuk Chof Beis, and we've included this pasuk on the side of the Gemara where it says v'chi inotsu anoshim. The pasuk describes two men that are fighting physically with one another, v'nokfu isha hara, and they hit a pregnant woman, v'yotsu yolada, and she miscarried, v'lo yeosoin. That is taken to mean, and if there is no death involved, onosh ye onesh, then money is paid for the miscarriage. Kasher yoshisolav balo isha v'nosan biflilin. The pasuk then that Rabbi Akiva cites ki yinotsu anoshim, he infers anoshim v'lo shvorim, the payment for the loss of the child, the loss of the fetus, is when men are fighting, and the man causes the miscarriage because of his impact. Not oxen. Oxen who are responsible for miscarriage, the owners do not have to pay. So from the word anoshim, anoshim, yes, have to pay, not oxen. Shapir komer Abikiva. Abikiva seems to be making a strong point. So what then is the need for Baal Hashor Noki in reality? Omar Rav Ula Breid Ravidi, Itzterich. We have a new marking. You'll notice a double underline. And on the side of the Gemara, under the Mivneh, the structural note that accompanies this Gemara, we have numbers 1 through 4. Our note continues by saying, 4 nisyonos. There are 4 attempts. Lahasbir lomalur fi Rabbi Yossi Aglili tzrichim Baal Hashor Noki. What is the purpose of having Baal Hashor Noki according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili? So now we continue in the Gemara. Itzterich, I need Baal Hashor Noki according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Salka daita chamina. Had I not had that posuk, I would have thought. Anoshim, from the posuk that Rabbi Kiva cites and the inference drawn from Anoshim, I would have thought as follows. Anoshim velo shvorim hadoimin la'anoshim. Anoshim have to compensate for miscarriage, but not oxen that have a legal characteristic of men. Ma anoshim mu'odim, just like a person is considered mu'od. As soon as a person causes damage, he pays full damages. There's no concept of chatzi nezek by people. So just like men are mu'odim, af Shvarim Mu'adim. So too, the inferred exclusion of oxen or oxen that are like men, namely a Shor HaMu'ad, would be exempt. Hata Mechayev. However, the docile type animal, that would be obligated to pay Demei V'lodos, the miscarriage payment. Therefore, Kosav Rachmona Bala Sharnoki, the Torah therefore wrote, the additional pasuk will say of Bala Sharnoki, the potter, that even the tam is potter from paying Demei V'lodos. That the tam is also exempt. Now, let's go over the thinking for a moment. Initially, I would have thought that the mu'ad, the more aggressive type animal, is the one that's exempt. But the docile animal would have to compensate. Does that make sense? Omar Rava. Rava asks this question with a phrase. Yetziva ba'ara v'giyura b'shmei shmaya. Is the yetziva is a reference to a person who is an official citizen of a particular area. Does the citizen occupy the ground? Meaning, is he on the lower position, and the giyora, the stranger, the non-citizen, b'shmei shmaya, is up in heaven, is up high? In other words, does it make sense to say that the more aggressive animal is going to be exempt, and the more docile animal is going to be obligated? Elo Omar Rava. So Rava gives us his take on the need for Bala Shornoki according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. He says, Itzterich, I really need Bala Shornoki. Salka Daita Chamina, I would have thought, had I just had Rabbi Akiva's Posuk on Noshim, and the inference, Velo Shvorim Hadoimin La Noshim, to the exclusion of oxen that are like, that have the characteristics of men. What characteristic? Ma anoshim mu'adim, af shvorim mu'adim. Just like man is mu'ad, so too an ox that is mu'ad would be exempt. V'kal v'chomer l'tamin d'ptiri. And all the more so a tam would be exempt. Hodar kosav rachmona bala shornoki. Then we have the additional pasuk that says the owner of the ox is exempt. Tam potter. Umuad chayav, that only the docile animal remains potter, exempt, but the aggressor animal will have to compensate for demei vlodos. So that if a shor muad causes a miscarriage, according to this approach, the owner will have to compensate for demei vlodos, just like a man who causes a miscarriage. Omar Le Abaye. Note, we have a long question marking. Abaye asks, Elo Me'ata. Well, if this approach to the verses is the way to go, Gabi Boishes Nami Ne'mahachi. With regard to the payment that is referred to by the term Boishes, which means payment for embarrassment that one sustains after being hurt or damaged, why not say the same thing, the same type of drosha? And the result of that would be that the shor tam is exempt from paying for boshes, and a shor muad is chayev for paying for boshes. And we know that's not the case. Let us take note of the bracketed section. Initially, we're going to read the bracket, we're going to read the Gemara, we're skipping the brackets, in order to preserve the flavor, the music of the Gemara, the standard Gemara flow. And then we'll go back to the brackets, because if you start reading the information immediately in the brackets, you lose a sense of the Gemara flow. We'll do first the Gemara flow, then the bracket information. So at this point, Abaye is saying to Rava, according to your approach, then by Boishes, we're going to end up saying the same thing. And that would be that a tam is exempt, but a mu'ad that causes Boishes, a shor mu'ad that causes Boishes, the owner has to compensate for that. And boshes being, once again, causes embarrassment. V'chitema, skipping the brackets, v'chitema hachi nami. And if you say that's right, well, hachi, if that's the case, then it should have said above in the source as follows. And it doesn't say this. What should it have said? Bala shornoki. What does Bala shornoki teach? Rabbi Yosef Gliliomer, it teaches me potur midmei vlados umi boshes. Rabbi Yosef Glili was teaching the posuk, or telling us that Bala shornoki teaches me exemption. It should have said exemption from miscarriage, money, and from embarrassment. But it doesn't say that. Let's go back now over the bracketed section. Starting at the beginning of the line, Elo Me'ata, Abaye asks, according to you, Rava, your approach, then Gabi Boshes Nami Neimahachi, regarding Boshes, it should say thusly, Anoshim. Now this is a reference to a posuk in Dvarim, Perek Chofhei, posuk Yud Aleph. And this posuk is the source for the payment of boshes, and it says there, ki, reading the posuk, it says, ki yinotsu anoshim, noting the word anoshim again, ki yinotsu anoshim yachtov ish v'yachiv, two men are fighting with one another, v'korvo eishes o'echot la'atzil es isha miyad makehu, and the wife of one of the men that's fighting gets draws near to save her husband from the aggressor. She extends her hand and grabs the aggressor's, we'll say, private parts, and that's something that will cause him embarrassment. And the Pasuk Yudbei says, "V'katzeis kapo lo isochay seinecha," and the Meforshim, the Tereshuv Al Peh, tells us that means she will have to pay for causing embarrassment. In the pasuk we just read, you notice it said anoshim. So say the same type of drasha, anoshim. There is we'll say payment for boshes. The lo shvorim hadoimin lanoshim, but not in the case of oxen. Ma anoshim muadim, just like an ox is muad, just like a person is muad. Af shvorim muadim, so too animals that are muad. V'kal b'chomer l'tamin d'ptiri, and all the more so the docile type animal will be exempt from boshes. Hodar kosav rachmona bala shornoki. Then the Torah writes the pasuk above that Rabbi Yosef Glili cited from Shmos Perek Chaf Aleph, that the owner of the ox is exempt. Tam poter umuad chayav. The tam is the only one that really experiences exemption, benefits from the inference from the exemption, and not the muad. So the result of this, the result of Rova's approach, as far as Abaye's question is concerned, that the shor muad pays for boishes. V'chitema hochinami, and if you say that's right, ihochi lisni, then it should have said baal hashor noki, the owner of the ox is exempt. Rabbi Yosi Glili Omer Potter mitmei vlados umi boshes, he is exempt from paying for the miscarriage, as we saw above, and from boshes as well. But Rabbi Yosef Glili doesn't say that. Elo Abaye v'Rova di Amri Travayu. Here both Abaye and Rova come together and say that had I had just Anoshim, then I would have inferred the following. Now, take note of the Gemara structure. Once again, in order to preserve, we'll say, the music of the Gemara, the rhythm of the Gemara, we would read it without the bracketed section, even though the brackets contain essential information. We have a little starred note on the side, Diluk al haktoyim besograyim, belimud rishoni, the skipping of the contents in the brackets upon first read-through, mekilo al retzif hakriya. It makes the flow of the reading a bit easier. V'chein b'hemshech ha-gemora b'mispar 4. Likewise, the same approach when we get to number four of the double underlines. So just to get a sense of the music of the Gemara, let's read with the skipping. So Abai and Rava Travayu, they both say, Anoshim velo shvorim. Hodor kosav rachmona baal hashor noki de potter. Now we'll go over that again. Abai and Rava suggest that had I had just the posuk of Anoshim, I would have thought in the case of the issue of the miscarriage, Ein oson be'isha ye'onshu. If the woman is not killed, if she remains alive, just miscarries, then there is a money payment. Yesh oson be'isha lo ye'onshu. If the woman ends up dying, then there's no money payment. The word yeonshu has to do with a money payment for the miscarriage. The reason, the logic behind that would be that when there is a capital offense, when someone is killed, so then the murderer is put to death, and as such, that exempts him from paying the, we'll say, the paying money, which would be a lesser type penalty. We have a concept called kom le bidarabo mine. A person, when becomes guilty of two punishments, in this case, miscarriage would result in the paying of money, and the killing of the woman, capital punishment. We apply only one punishment to the offender, the more severe one. So that if yesh oson bish oson, a reference to death of the woman, then there will be no money payment. That would be the law regarding man as an aggressor. And now we would infer v'lo shvarim, as opposed to the way we would deal with oxen, the afagav di yesh oson yeyonshu. That even if there is death, if the ox causes the woman's death, the owner has to pay for the miscarriage as well. That is what I would have thought without Rabbi Yossi Aglili's pasuk of Baal HaShor Noki. That in the case of aggressor man, well, the money payment depends on whether or not the woman died. But when it comes to oxen, there's always going to be a money payment for the miscarriage, even if she does die. Then the Torah writes, Baal HaShor Noki, the potter, that the ox, in other words, don't darshan the posuk as we suggested, but rather the ox is exempt under all circumstances from paying money from the Demei Vlados. Maskif lo Rav Ado Bar Avo. Rav Ado Bar Avo, in a rather terse fashion, rejects what Abai and Rava just suggested. There is a great amount of background that really is necessary before one can appreciate this very, we'll say, cryptic remark he makes. He says as follows, just reading the words initially, Atuva Osain Talia Milsa. Bekavona Talia Milsa. In order to appreciate this, we look together at Rashi. Starting with Rashi, toward the last, we'll say the last, the third or last quarter of the page, Otu Ba'osan Talia Milsa, Bekavona Talia Milsa, Viafilu Yesh Osan Be'isha. Rav Ado's approach is that with regard to the woman, whether she stays alive or even if she is killed, in the case of the altercation between the men, even if she dies, yeonshu, regarding anoshim, there will be a money payment. You'll ask, what about kom le b'darabamine? De svira le By the way, when we said what about kamlei bedrabba minei, what we're suggesting is that if the woman is killed, then the one who killed her has to pay with his own life. He's executed by the court. However, there's another opinion on that topic. It's true that if the woman is killed, there's court execution. That's only if the aggressor intended to kill her. If the aggressor intended to hit the other guy that was fighting with him, and he happened to kill the woman without his specific intent to kill her, even though he had murderous intentions, but that was with regard to the guy he was fighting with, not the woman. According to Rabbi Shimon, and Rav Ado Bar Ava subscribes to that, the offender, the killer, will not be subject to a capital offense. And therefore, there's room to impose upon him the financial payment. And so Rashi explains, and this is all through the eyes of Rav Ado Bar Ava, even if the woman dies, there still is room to speak about a money payment. When? In this Kavein L'Chavero. If the man that kills the woman had intention to kill the man that he was fighting with, not the woman herself. Desfirulei the Rav Ado k'Rabbi Shimon. Rav Ado accepts Rabbi Shimon's approach. The Omer Masechus Sanhedrin Beilein and Nisrofin is Kavein Laro Gezeb Ora Gezeb Potter Mi Misa. V'chayav Momon. If a person intended to kill A and ended up killing B, so the killer is exempt from death penalty, and that enables us to impose upon him financial responsibility, compensation. Now, that approach is not in accordance with another school of thought, the Leslei, the Tana de Bechizkia, Rabbi Shimon, doesn't hold from the Tana de Bechizki approach, the Omar, that says, Loi chilakta boi bain miskavein, l'shein miskavein, l'chaiva momon elo l'potra momon. When it comes to capital type of events, I say capital type events, according to Tana de Bechizki, if you're involved with a situation that there could have been a death penalty, even if in your specific situation there is no death penalty, there is always going to be a financial exemption, a p'tur momon. Rav Shimon is not saying like that. He's not giving a blanket exemption. Rav Shimon's approach rather is, if there's an actual capital punishment that's going to be meted out, then there's an exemption from paying. However, if that existed only in potential, but because you didn't have kavona, it's not considered a capital offense, and there's not going to be any capital punishment. Therefore, there is a financial penalty imposed. So Rav Ado Bar Ava goes with Rav Shimon. The lo ye osoin dekra, the pasuk that speaks about the payment for demei velados if there is no death, leaving us to think that if there is death, then there is no payment. That's bechaveiro kodorishle, the death of the fellow who he has intent to kill, the one that he's fighting with, as follows: imein oson bechaveiro, if chaveiro doesn't die in this altercation, afilu yesh oson beisha, even if the woman happens to die, yeonesh, there is payment to be made for the demei vlados. So what we have described now, as far as the topic of men is concerned, the kevon de anoshim, since amongst men ahecho diyesh oson nami yeonshu, where there is a death, the death of the woman, there is payment to be made since there wasn't specific intention to kill her. So it comes out not only where there's no death at all, there is a chiyuv of paying, but even when there is a death, there is a chiyuv, there is a financial penalty that is levied. And now, when you're talking about anoshim, whether there's oson or not, there's going to be payment. Ishtakach the image shvorim, then when we say anoshim velo shvarim, we exclude shvarim. We're excluding them. Bain be yesh alson, bain be shein alson. Whether there is a death of the person, of the woman, or even if there's no death of the woman, there will always be exemption. So, Bala Sharnaki Lomali, what am I going to do with Bala Sharnaki right now? According to Abaya and Rava, just to review what they had said that by man, we make a distinction whether the woman is killed or not. Man will only if the woman is if the woman is not killed, man pays. Abai and Rava said if the woman is killed, no payment. Not so in the case of Shvarim. They said that even if she's killed, there will be payment. At this point, though, what do you mean? Says Rav Ada Bar Ava. Even when it comes to the man, we are saying whether she dies, and certainly if she doesn't die, there is payment. Therefore, when it comes to oxen, says Rav Ada Bar Ava, there is never going to be payment. So, Bala Sharnaki is not needed to tell me an exemption from Dmei Vlados. That was all contained in this one brief line of Rav Ada Bar Ava, who said, "Otu Basan Talia Milsa Bekavona Talia Milsa." Therefore, El Omer Rav Ada Bar Ava. At this point, Rav Ada Bar Ava has to give us his approach to what do I need Bala Sharnaki for? Because up till this point, I don't need Bala Sharnaki to teach me an exemption. All of that could have been inferred from the word Anoshim itself. Therefore, Rav Ada Bar Ava says, and again we have the bracket experience where we see Anoshim skipping Velo Shvarim. I would have thought Anoshim and not Shvarim. Therefore, Kosav Rahman, I would have. Therefore, the Torah writes Bala Sharnaki Deptiri. That, again, just to give you a sense of the flow. Now let's go over the Gemara in full. Rav Ada Bar Ava says, Anoshim, when it comes to men, ki niskavnu ze lo ze, when they had intent, one to kill the other. Af agav sheyesh oson b'isha yeonshu, when they were intending to kill one another. Even though the woman dies, there is money payment. Ki niskavnu l'isha atzma lo yeonshu, when there was intent to kill the woman herself, then there's no money payment. Based on, of course, the kum leba de rabba mine, person gets the more severe penalty, and when there was intent to kill the woman herself, so there's not going to be any financial payment levied, because there you have a capital punishment. So when it comes to anoshim, there is a distinction made. Velo shvarim, but not with regard to oxen. Dafilu niskavnu leisha atzmo yeonshu. If there was intent to kill the woman, if the animal was charging the woman herself and caused her death and miscarriage, so yeonshu, the oxen will always pay demei vlodus. Chosav rachmona bala sharnoki. The Torah writes bala sharnoki diptiri, that oxen that cause miscarriage are exempt from demei velados, for paying for the miscarriage. V'chein ki also Rav Chagi midroma also v'ayisi masnisa biyodei kavosei the Rav Ada Bar Ava. And likewise Rav Chagai brought a Tanaic source that teaches in the same spirit, the same way that Rav Ada Bar Ava taught. So at the end of this discussion, we understand why Rabbi Yosef Glili cited Bala Sharnaki, and he said it. Bala Sharnaki is exempt from Demei Vlados, because had I had just the Pasuk that Rabbi Akiva cited Anoshim, I would have thought to infer that Anoshim are chayev to pay, that by Anoshim there is room for exemption of Demei Volodos, as we explained in detail already, and not so by the case of oxen. There's no room for exemption. Therefore, Bala Sharnaki tells me not so. But rather, Balash, the owner of the ox that caused the miscarriage, is exempt from paying Dmei Volados. Tanya Idach. Here we have a third Tanaic source, which Darshan's Bala Sharnaki, different than what we saw in our previous Shon Daf Mem Aleph, a third alternative approach to the initial approach that had Darshan Bala Sharnaki taught the Isur Hanoah regarding Oros. Tanya Idoch, Baal Hasharnoki, Rabbi Akiva Oimer Noki Midme Eved. Take special note of the fact that Rabbi Akiva here is the one that's darshaning the posuk Baal Hasharnoki. Up till now, we saw that posuk Baal Hasharnoki darshaned by Rabbi Eliezer, to whom Rabbi Akiva reacted, and by Rabbi Yossi Aglili, to whom Rabbi Akiva reacted. And in each case, Rabbi Akiva was claiming that whatever the Tanakhama was saying could have been derived without the pasuk of Baal HaSharnoki. Now, Rabbi Akiva is suggesting a drosha from that very pasuk, that Noki Midmei Eved. What does that mean? If a heathen slave is killed by the Shor Tam, the money payment that we associate with the killing of an Eved Kenani, if a person kills an Eved Kenani, he pays Shloishim Kesef, 30 pieces of silver. Bala Sharnaki comes to tell me that when it comes to an animal killing a heathen slave, when it comes to a short time killing a heathen slave, no restitution is made, no payment is made. That Shloshim Shalevit payment, by the way, is a Torah-dictated amount, regardless of the market value of the slave that was killed. The Gemara now asks, on the top of Omid Beis, V'neima Rabbi Akiva lenafshei. Couldn't Rabbi Akiva have said to himself, so to speak, that which he had said on Daf Mem Aleph Omid Beis? We have a little arrow, by the way, indicating to go back to Mem Aleph Omid Beis, where we saw Rabbi Akiva responding to Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer spoke about was a shor tam that kills a person, and Rabbi Eliezer said there is no chatzi kofer payment. To which Rabbi Akiva, and where did Rabbi Eliezer get that from? From Bala Shornoki. The Torah tells me that there is an exemption from payment. Without the Torah telling me, I guess the thinking was at the time that there should be a payment. Rabbi Akiva, at that point on Mem Aleph Omid Beis, had said, what do you need the Torah tell you that there is no payment of Chatzi Kofer, the money payment when a person is killed? A money payment when a person is killed by an ox. If a Shor Muad kills someone, so Kofer is paid. That's the name of the financial restitution. If it's a Shor Tam that kills, so Rabbi Eliezer says, from the Posse Gabala Shornoki, I learn that there is no half Kofer payment. Rabbi Akiva at that point said, what do I need the Posse for? A Shor Tam makes payment when it causes damage, causes loss. Payment is made from the animal, the carcass itself. The animal itself. But in the case of a shor that kills a human being, and we're going to now speak about the killing of a slave as well, the animal is put to death. The animal is stoned. The carcass is worthless. It's even also bahanos, even also to benefit from it. So Rabbi Akiva there said to Rabbi Eliezer, when you're trying to teach me from the pasuk of Baal HaSharnoki, exemption from paying Chatzi Kofer, that's obvious. There's no other means of paying. There's no means of paying for the death of the person. When you're dealing with a short time, the payment comes from the animal itself. And the animal in the case where a person is killed is worth nothing. So of course there's exemption. Hence the Gemara is asking here, regarding Rabbi Akiva, who speaks about exemption from Demei Eved, why doesn't Rabbi Akiva say to himself, hey, you know, you don't really need Baal HaSharnoki. Let him say to himself, this is a quote of what we saw in Mem Aleph Amud Beis, in Rabbi Akiva's response to Rabbi Eliezer, v'halo aksmo ein mishtalei mela miguvo, hevieu lebeizdin v'yishalei moch. Payments that are as a result of damage caused by a short time is from the animal itself. Hey, without the pasuk, I know that there's no payment. The animal has been stoned. It killed a slave. The animal is put to death. The carcass is not worth anything. That's why he's exempt. Our question then is quite obvious. Why does Rabbi Akiva rely on the pasuk to teach an exemption that is self-evident? On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei / mivne heading. The triangle marking appears, and note there is a numeration that appears alongside the Gemara. We have numbered three triangles. These are tshuvos. We're reading our note on the side. Tshuvos la she'ela, responses to the question. Loma Rabbi Akiva tzorcha posik shel Baal HaSharnoki liftor shor tam mitmei eved. Why does Rabbi Akiva need the posik of Baal HaSharnoki to teach an exemption in the case of a short time that kills a heathen slave? Harei gam b'li haposik ein lebailim l'shalem. Even without the posik, the owner of the aggressor animal isn't going to pay. The tam shalem migufo. This aggressor, Shor Tam, that killed the Evid, killed the slave, is put to death by stoning. And anyway, there's no means of paying. There's no source of payment, as payment in the Shor Tam comes from the animal itself, not from other assets. So what do I need the pasuk for? Omar Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchok, kishekidam bailov v'shachto. Rabbi Akiva will tell you that the pasuk is addressing a very specific situation where the owner of the aggressor animal, before a death sentence was passed on the animal, went ahead and slaughtered the animal. Mahu detema lishtale minei. I would have thought that in such a case, let payment be made from the meat that has value. It was slaughtered before the verdict was passed, so the thinking is that there's no isur hanah on this. It has value. Let payment be made to the owner of the killed slave. Be made from the meat, from the slaughtered meat. Kamash malon. Baal HaSharnoki tells me, Hayol Ubar Katlahu, since this animal is subject to, it has committed an offense worthy of execution, of killing the animal, Afagav Deshachte, even though he jumped the gun and slaughtered it before the verdict, Lo Lishtalem Mine, the meat is not going to be used as a source of payment. Baal HaSharnoki, the owner of the aggressor animal, is exempt from paying. So Rabbi Akiva now has constructed a very useful purpose in the pasuk, where I would have thought a payment could have been made from the slaughtered meat of the slaughtered ox that was slaughtered before the verdict was passed. The owner doesn't pay with that. Well, ihachi, if that be the case, why did Rabbi Akiva jump on Rabbi Eliezer back on the Mem Aleph Amud Beis? L'Rezer Nami, couldn't the same logic have been used for Rebbe Elazar. In other words, the same explanation be used for Rebbe Elazar himself. Kishakidam v'shachto. What did Rebbe Elazar say? Rebbe Elazar said that if a short time kills a regular person, a regular Jew, so the short time is exempt from paying chatzi kofar. And you know what the circumstances were? That the aggressor animal owner slaughtered the animal before the verdict was passed. And the Baal HaShanoki teaches me an exemption. So why did Rabbi Akiva jump there on Rabbi Elazar when the same explanation Rabbi Akiva is offering for himself here by the exemption of Demei Eved could have been used to explain why it's necessary to teach the exemption from Chatzi Kofer? At this point we have a bracketed section. The starred note says as follows. Machas HaSagram, the purpose of these brackets, Laharos, Shiesh Koshi, B'tshuvosos Shreb Shmuel Bar Yitzchok. Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchok's explanation of Keshikita Baila V'shachtai is a problematic answer. It's the problem being, why did Rabbi Akiva, if this is the real explanation of Rabbi Akiva, why did he jump on Rabbi Elazar back on Daf Mem Aleph Amid Beis? So this is a problematic answer. In other words, what you saw in the triangle of Shmuel Bar Yitzchok, his answer is problematic. Uzikukim lehezber chodesh, and we need a new explanation. Rabbi Kiva said, Baal HaShanoki teaches me Ptur of Demei Eved. I don't need that lichaora. Superficially, it seems that I could have figured that out on my own. Once again, based on what Rabbi Kiva himself had said, that the tashlum, the payment, is migufo, and in killing a slave, the animal is put to death. And short time payment is made only from the carcass, from migufo, and the gufo here, the carcass, is worth nothing, and there's no other means of paying, because we don't draw from his assets. So I really don't need Baal HaShanoki. After the bracketed section, you'll see Rav Asi, number two, he explains then why I really do need, why Rabbi Kiva needs Baal HaShanoki. Beso Hasogram, we continue with our note within the bracketed section. Hagemara male kushos umenase letaretz. The Gemara raises questions, tries to answer the questions. Avlikras soif haketa besagraim nishra kushi. By the time we get to the end of the bracketed section, the difficulty remains. Ekev kach Hagemara mamshicha letshuvas Ravasi, and as a result of that, the Gemara then moves on to Ravasi's approach. So we continue now with that overview. We can now go back to the Gemara, the bracketed section. Our question had been why, if Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchok's explanation is correct of Keshikita Baila V'shachtai, why did Rabbi Kiva jump on Rabbi Elazar on Mem Aleph Amid Beis when that case of Kidam Baal HaVishachtah could have been, in fact, the motivation behind Rebbe Elazar himself? So the Gemara says, Hochinami, you know what? You're right. You're asking then, why did Rabbi Akiva jump on him there? Why did he raise an objection to Rebbe Elazar on Mem Aleph Amid Beis? V'savar, Rabbi Akiva thought, Dilmo isle taimo achrina de odif mehai. V'neimolei. Rabbi Akiva was calculating that Rabbi Eliezer might have had a better explanation for why we need the pasuk of Baal HaShanoki. And Rabbi Akiva was hoping that he would come out and say it. But he didn't. And in fact, in Rabbi Akiva's, we'll say, outlook, Baal HaShanoki could be used then for this scenario of Kidam V'shachto. Just to repeat, if you're asking why did Rabbi Akiva object to Rabbi Elazar on Mem Aleph Amid Beis, when Rabbi Elazar could have used this explanation that Rabbi Kiva himself is using, according to Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchok, Then why did Rabbi Akiva raise objections to Rabbi Lezer? He was, because Rabbi Akiva was thinking that Rabbi Lezer had some other better use of Baal HaShor Naki, and could have and was hoping he would come out and say it. Well, in that discussion, by the way, between on Daf Mem Aleph Amid Beis, there was a Rabbi Akiva raised his objection. Rabbi Lezer responded to him. And his response was that, well, I'm talking about the exemption of Chatzi Kofer in a case where the animal is not put to death. The Rabbi Lezer, why on Daf Mem Aleph Omid Beis did Rabbi Lezer take a different approach in his response to Rabbi Akiva? Nami Lishni Le, Rabbi Eliezer on Daf Mem Aleph Amud Beis could have simply said back to Rabbi Akiva, Shekina B'Shachto. As we see, Rabbi Akiva himself likes that approach. That's a good reason for teaching Baal HaShor Naki, that in the event that the animal is slaughtered before the verdict is in, still no payment is made. So why didn't Rabbi Eliezer himself say that as the response? He didn't. He went on to a different track, as you can see if you look back on Daf Mem Aleph Amid Beis. Omar Loch. Notice we have an answer, a long answer marking. Rebbe Lezer will tell you, Hossam, there back on Mem Aleph Amid Beis, Hossam who diniskave laroi gesabahem of oragas adam. The case that Rabbi Lezer said is where I need the Torah to teach me the Ptur Chatzi Kofer, where an animal intended to kill another animal but ended up killing a person. The Shor Lav Bar Katlahu Klau. The animal is not subject to being killed there at all. The Saka Deita Chamino Nechayev. Since the animal is not being put to death, I would have thought that there should be a financial compensation that's made. Pay koifer. Pay the chatzi koifer. It's drich krol lemute. Therefore, the posuk tells me, no, he's exempt from chatzi koifer. He's exempt from chatzi koifer under circumstances that without the posuk, I would have thought there should be payment. Aval ha. But in the case of the Demei Eved, Demei Kora, Bar Katlo Have, where the animal is essentially guilty, punishable by being stoned. Lo Tzorich Kro, Afal Gav D'Shachte. I don't need a pasuk to teach me exemption, even if he happened to slaughter the animal ahead of time, before the verdict was in. So, in this case, even without the pasuk, Rabbi Eliezer feels that the exemption is so obvious because here you're dealing with an animal that's bar katla. And this, by the way, this svora we saw above in the name of Rav Shmuel Bar Rav Yisuk explaining Rabbi Akiva himself. So that where you're dealing with an animal that's a bar katla, the exemption is obvious. The animal committed an offense for which it is going to be put to death. So, of course, there's not going to be any payment made. By the way, this concept is rooted in another teaching that says Kamisas Habaylim Kach Misas Hashor, where if the man himself, or the owner himself, had committed the act, he would be put to death. So too, we treat the animal the same way. And just like in the case of man, when he's put to death, there's no money payment, so too with the case of the animal, when it's put to death, there should be no money payment. So without Baal HaShor Naki, I know the exemption. The Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva Nami Vaday Hochi Have. According to Rabbi Akiva himself, it certainly is like that. And we just added, he said that above. In other words, according to Shmuel Rav Yitzchok, in his explanation of Rabbi Akiva, we saw this five lines from the top of the Gemara. So is this not Is this not the case, even according to Rabbi Kiva himself? So I don't need Baal HaShornoki to tell me about exemption from Demei Eved. The animal is chayev to be put, the short time that killed an Eved is chayev to be put to death. Therefore, there's no reason for thinking that there would have been an obligation to pay the Demei Eved, even without the Pasuk. Elo Omar Rav Asi. Our problem is, and this is a problem that was raised at the very top of this Omid, why is Rabbi Kiva citing Baal HaShornoki to teach me the Ptur Demei Eved when payment is made from, in the case of a short time, from the body itself, and the body itself, of the carcass itself, is not worth anything. The animal has been stoned. And the suggestion of Kidam Bailet V'Shochtoi, you can see, is something that is not really a Hava Amina. The Gemara, Ella Omer Avasi, we continue in the Gemara. Hi Milsa Mipi Degav Rabba Shmieli. The following I heard from a great man, Umanun, who's the great man, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. Why does Rabbi Kiva need Baal HaShornoki to tell me that a short time does not pay Demei Eved? Sa'ka Daita Chamina. I would have thought without the Pasuk. What would I have thought? Hayel V'yomer Rabbi Kiva. Since Rabbi Kiva says, Af Tam Shechova Ba'odam Mishalem B'moysar Nezek Shalem, Rabbi Kiva has a special approach to a short Tam. And that even though when a short time, when a docile animal injures another animal, it pays half damages, if a short time inflicts injury on a man, and the even if the man happened to fight back and cause injury to the ox, the owner of the short time will pay full damages, minus whatever damages were inflicted upon the ox by that man. But when after subtracting the damages to the ox, the short tam that imposed damage on a man, full payment is made. So Rabbi Kiva has this, we'll say, this strict approach to a short tam that inflicts damage on man. So since Rabbi Kiva says, let's read that again. Even a short tam that happened to injure a person, the owner of the ox will pay the balance of the full damages. I say balance, it's after subtracting whatever loss the animal may have had suffered. Mishtale nami de me'eved me'aliyah. I would have thought that the payment for Demei Eved, if a short time killed a slave, money for that is going to be drawn from the owner of the ox's account, from his assets. Aliyah means his assets. Hence the svara before that a short time is payment is made only migufo. That's when a short time injures another animal. But here you're dealing with the killing of a human being, of a heathen slave. Here I would have thought without the pasuk that payment is made from the account, from the assets of the aggressor ox owner. Therefore, Chasav Rachmana Baal HaShornoki, that the owner is exempt from paying Demei Eved. Omer Le Rabbi Zeira L'Ravasi. Rabbi Zeira asks on Ravasi, who was the one who just advanced this Havamina, the Havamina being that I would have thought without the Pasuk that there should be payment. Why? Because Rabbi Kiva has a strict approach to Tam Shechova B'Yodam. Rabbi Zeira asks, B'hot Tavrei Rabbi Akiva L'Gzize. Rabbi Akiva himself neutralized his own strict approach. Literally, he Tavrei means he broke his gzize, broke his strength. He undid his own approach. Desanya. Where do we see Rabbi Akiva, let's say, rolling back, retreating from his extreme approach to short tam? It says in the following source, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Yochol Yishalei Minu Aliyah. The halacha we mentioned before, that the owner, the short tam Shechova Bodom, is Mishalei B'moysar Nezek Shalei. Rabbi Akiva says, oh, he's going to pay full damages. Should that payment be drawn from his assets, from his account? Min aliyah, general property that the offender owns. Talmud lomar, kemishpat hazeh, yeyaselo. That's a pasuk from which we learn, migufo, mishalei veino, mishalei min aliyah. You notice we've used a dot underline, migufo, so you can contrast this with the word aliyah above. That even though full damage is going to be paid, but it's going to be limited to gufo, so that there is no havamina that we can say within Rabbi Akiva that the demei eved would be drawn from the aliyah, because Rabbi Akiva himself says payments for people that are injured by oxen, all those payments are made migufo, from the animal's body itself. And if that be the case, the animal who killed the slave is going to be put to death, it's going to be stoned, the carcass is worth nothing. Even without Baal HaSharnoki, I know there is no payment to be made, just to repeat, because if there would have been any payment, it would have been made from the carcass migufo. Ela Omar Rava. Once again, what do I need Baal HaSharnoki, according to Rabbi Akiva, to teach me Ptur Midmeved? What would I have thought without that pasuk? Salko Daito Chamino. Hayol Umachmireni Be'eved Yoiser Miben Chorin. Skip the brackets just initially. Mishtale Nami De Me'eved Minu Aliyah. Since we find greater stringency to with regard to the way we approach a killed slave, more than the way we approach Ben Chorin, the animal killing a rank and file Jew. It's true Rabbi Akiva spoke about the Tashlum Migufo, but that was only with regard to a Ben Chorin, a regular Jew that's killed. But when it comes to a slave, maybe we're not limited to Migufo, but we will draw from his assets. Therefore, because of Rachmona Baal HaSharnoki, the Torah has to write Baal HaSharnoki to tell me exemption even from Demei Eved. Now, we skip the brackets. We have to go over them again. We have another marking that we didn't feature, and that's the house marking. Its value will be appreciated only when we go further into the Gemara. On the side, under our Mivneh, we indicate that this house is Litzor Kesher, to create a connection by Divrei Rava, Vabraisa Shemuvel Lesayo, to connect Rava's statement and the Braisa that's brought later to support Rava. So now we go back over the Gemara with the bracketed section. Rava said, it's true that Rabbi Akiva mentioned that the payment for humans that are damaged by a short tam is limited to Migufo. However, here we're dealing with not a rank and file Jew, which was the topic before, but rather Demei Eved. Salko Daita Chamina. Hayul, and we're reading the word in the house, you see, Umachmireni Be'eved Yoiser mi ben chorin, she ben chorin, when it comes to a person that's killed by an ox, yofesela noisen sela, shloishim noisen shloishim. The payment we call kofer, that payment is made in accordance with the market value of the person. If he was worth a sela, type of coin, you pay a sela. If he was worth 30, you pay 30. The eved, when it comes to a slave, though, yofesela noisen shloishim. The eved was worth practically nothing. You nevertheless, if he was worth one sela, you pay 30. That's a Torah dictated amount, regardless of market value. So since you see this, we'll say, stringency with regard to Ebed, he could have been worth just one sela, I'm going to pay 30. Mishtale nami demei Ebed, menu aliyah. I would have thought that if an ox for short time kills a heathen slave, the payment is not limited to gufo, but it's drawn from the owner's assets. Therefore, the Torah writes that the owner is exempt from Demei Eved. Tanya Kavose de Rava. A Tanaic source appears that will support Rava. The support will be highlighted when you get to the house marking later into the source. The source reads, Baal Hashor Noki, the same opening pasuk, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Noki Midmei Eved. I need the pasuk to tell me that the owner of the ox that killed a slave, he's exempt from compensating the owner of that slave. Do I really need the pasuk though? Valo dinhu. Through logic, I could come to that conclusion. Hayo v'chayav be'evin v'chayav be'ben chorin. Since we're saying that there is a chiyuv in the case of, there's obligation in the case of a slave, and there's obligation in the case of Ben Chorin, a regular Jew, that is killed by an ox. Ma kishechayev Ben Chorin, chilak da boy, bein tam lemuad. Just like in the case of a Ben Chorin that's killed, the Torah makes a distinction between tam and muad. Namely, muad pays kofer. The tam does not pay kofer. Af kishechayev Beved, so too, when it comes to an ox killing a heathen slave, let us make a distinction between tam and muad. The tam that kills a slave, it will be exempt. What do I need the pasuk for? Theoid kal v'chomer. And furthermore, we can use kal v'chomer logic. Uma ben chorin shenoisein kol shavyo. Mind you, when a ben chorin is killed, when a regular Jew is killed, his entire value was compensated for. And yet, chilakta boi bein tam lemuad, we still make a distinction between tam and muad. Tam does not pay anything. Muad pays the full value of the Jewish victim. Eved, sheino no sein elo shloishim. When it comes to a slave, where we pay only 30. Even though so the slave might be worth more, we pay only 30. We don't pay full value. Ain't no din shenachlok bo, bain, tam, the wood. All the more so, there's room for being lenient and exempting the tam. And only the muad would have to pay. So the question is, what do I need the pasuk of Baal Hashor Noki to tell me that which I could have arrived at through logic? Nope. The Gemara says, no, if you're going to use logic, there's a response, a way to refute the logic. Machmireni be'eved yoiser mi ben chorin. I could argue that we're more strict with regard to eved than ben chorin. When it comes to Ben Chorin, if he happens to be worth very little, he's worth one sela coin, so the family of the Ben Chorin that was killed by the animal will pay the sela. If the Ben Chorin, the regular Jew that was killed by the muad, by the animal, was worth 30, you pay 30 to the family of the deceased. Ah, v'yeved. When it comes to a slave, though, he might have been worth very little, but still a full 30 will be paid. Yachol yei chayov, maybe a short time that kills an eved should have to pay the demei eved, the 30. Tamalomer bala shor noki, noki mi demei eved. So I need bala shor noki to tell me exemption from paying demei eved. As we look ahead, we have a topic heading on the side, and it reads, Ma habal biyerushas nizke ishto. Where does the husband fit in with regard to inheriting monies owed to his wife for damages done to her. When we speak about Yerusha, obviously the woman died before the payment was made. That payment then, does the husband inherit her? Generally speaking, the husband has the rights of inheritance concerning his wife. However, there might be, as we'll see in the Gemara, certain types of payments that the husband is not entitled to. There's certain aspects, say financial aspects, of his wife that the husband is not entitled to. And rather, it would go to, let's say, her family. Number one, kofer. Tashlum al harigos al yedei shor. If the wife was killed by an aggressor animal, the kofer payment. For shor muad kills a person, so kofer is paid. To whom is that paid? Is it paid to the husband? Is it paid to possibly her heirs from, I mean, her family? Number two, nezikin, nezek and sar, damage payments, damage and depreciation and pain. Number three, demei vlados, payment made for miscarriage, so that an animal caused her. So let's put it this way: she was caused a miscarriage, for which, generally speaking, there is demei vlados that's paid. To whom is it going to be paid in the event that she dies? The Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan. The pasuk that we're reading is from the context of a shor hamuad. Vehemis ish o isha, Omar Rabbi Akiva. Vehima bo zeh lelamdenu. This pasuk, what is it coming to teach me? Im lechayeval ho isha ki ish. The pasuk says, if the shor muad kills a man or a woman, if the purpose of this pasuk is to be mechayev, to impose responsibility for the killing of a woman, just like for the killing of a man, harei kvar nema, there's another pasuk that communicates that idea, ki yigach shor es ish o es isha. Woman is compared to man in the case of ox aggression. So what do I need? This opening pasuk, Elo lahakish isha leish. Rather, we want to compare the woman to the man in the following: Ma'ish nizokav liyorshav, af isha nizokeha liyorsheha. Just like a man who is injured and payment needs to be made, and in the event that the man dies, payment will be made to his heirs. So to the woman to whom there was owed tsar and nezek payments. In the event that she dies, the money is paid to her heirs, namely relatives of her from her family, as opposed to the husband. The husband will not inherit that. The Gemara asks, what do you mean the husband's not going to inherit money that's owed to his wife and now she's dead? Why wouldn't the husband inherit that? The Sovar Rabbi Kiva lo yoris lo baal. Does Rabbi Kiva hold that a man doesn't inherit his wife? Oh, Tanya. The pasuk says, "V'yorash oisa mikan shabal yoyresh es ishto div Rabbi Kiva." Rabbi Kiva acknowledges that a husband inherits his wife from the pasuk of "V'yorash oisa." So why does Rabbi Kiva have this oddity that nezikin payments owed to a woman in the event that she dies are not paid to the husband? He should be inheriting his wife. Omar Reish Lokish. Lo Omar Rabbi Akiva Ella Bekofer. Rabbi Akiva, who speaks here about a husband not inheriting, that's limited to the kofer payment. Payment made when an animal, when a shor muad kills a human being. Kofer is paid. Hoyol Ve'ein Mishtalem Ella Li'achar misa v'havi le roi, since the payment is made obviously only after the person, the victim, died, the woman was never in possession of these monies. These monies the Nezek and Sar payments are what we call outstanding. They're potential. She hasn't taken possession of them. It's paid only after she dies. So what we've described is something called roi, roi, anticipatory monies. V'eina baal noitel b'roi kibbe musak. When we speak about the husband inheriting his wife, he inherits only those entities that she was in possession of while she was alive. Anticipated monies, the husband does not inherit. My taima. Now here we look at Rashi. My taima ein kofer mishtalem elo liachar misa. Why is it that we say kofer is paid only after the death, after her death? Afagav dechsi vehenis. Neima de kevon sheamduhu lemisa lishtalem mechayim. Can we not say that since an evaluation was made that this impact was capable of killing, so already at the point of impact we estimated that that could kill a person, so let it be paid, let it be a payment made, be considered a payment that's made from her lifetime, and the husband would inherit. The Gemara responds, Omar Kro Vehemis ish o isha ashor isokel vegam olov yumas im kofer yushas olov. The Gemara doesn't elaborate on that citation, but Rashi does. So we look at Rashi, where we left off. Vehemis v'chule shor eino b'skila. The animal is not stoned ad shi yomuz anizak, until the victim dies. The pasuk that we saw in the Gemara, etc. And then it says, "Vashor yisokel." Only when the person dies will the animal be put to death. Up till that point, the payment is not going to be made. And therefore, it comes under the status of being roi, not musak. And a husband does not inherit his wife with regard to things that she herself had not collected. The Gemara asks, "Ubenezikin lo omar Rabbi Akiva?" In the case of damage payments with nezek and sar, Rabbi Akiva doesn't say that Ein Habal Yoresh. Up till this point, when you look at back at Reish Lakish, Reish Lakish said that Rabbi Akiva's exclusion of the husband inheriting is only in the case of Kofar. But in the case of damages, the husband does inherit. I want to go back and emphasize a detail, a point that might make this question confusing, but let's clarify things before we go any further. We opened this section of Gemara with a Tanaic source toward the end of the narrow lines. And at the end of that bracket, the framed section, we had dashed underline Luyor Sheha. And there it said, Af Isha Nizokeha Luyor Sheha. Just like a man who is injured, the money goes to his heirs. So too, with regard to a woman, the Nizokeha, and we dot underline that word, pay attention to this word Nizokeha. So too, Nizokeha Luyor Sheha, not to the husband. What do you mean, not to the husband? We asked, what, a husband doesn't inherit his wife? So Reish Lakish says, of course a husband inherits his wife. The source that we read, that Nizokel, the Yosheha, is limited to Kofer. And you'll notice we dot underline the word Kofer as well. However, as far as damage payments are concerned, those are payments that one makes even when the victim is alive. We don't wait till they die for that. Those are simple damage payments or pain payments that a husband will inherit. And now we lead into our new question, Ubenazikin lo Amar Rabbi Kiva, and regarding other forms of damage payment besides koifer, Rabbi Kiva wouldn't say the point he made before that Ein Habal Yorsha. V'ha Tanya, we have a Tanaic source, and in this source, you see at the we have a dashed underline phrase. It says Noisenes Liorsheha. Here we're not talking about kofar. We're talking about other payments. And in this source, specifically, Nezek and Sar is paid to her heirs. So we see from here that even regarding other forms of damage payment that are not kofar, the husband is not going to inherit. So why does Reish Lakish say that Rabbi Kiva's din is limited to kofar? Rabbi Kiva's din being that the Baal, the husband, does not inherit. Now let's read the source. V'ha Tanya, hika es ho'isha, a man hit a woman, v'yotsu yelodeha, and she miscarried, nosein nezek v'tzar li'isha, depreciation and pain is paid to the woman, udmei v'lodos labal, and the miscarriage money, the value of the fetus that was miscarried, that amount is paid to the husband. Ein habal, no sein liorshav, if the husband is not around, so the demei velodos would be paid to his heirs. Ein ha'isha, if the woman is not around, noisenes liorsheha, the nezek and tsar payments are paid to yorsheha. And this is the main problem. Now, the source continues with information that's, we'll say, not essential for our current discussion. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, the Bach in Ois Aleph seems to indicate that it's not part of, it's not necessary to have in our Gemara. So, we'll read the words, but we don't want to focus on that right now. It says, Hoysa shivcha v'nishtachura oy giyores zocha. If the victim was a woman that had been a bondmaid, a heathen bondmaid, and was set free, and she becomes like a convert, and therefore there's no one to inherit her, so the offender, the owner of the aggressor, he'll end up keeping the money that he would have otherwise had to pay. Likewise with a gioris, a convert, he who has no heirs, the aggressor will keep the money. To review the main problem, and that is, we have a source that says if the woman is not around, so the nezek and tsar is not going to be inherited by the husband, it's given to her heirs. But according to Reish Lakish, if the woman is not around, the husband would inherit. Because we're not dealing with kofar, we're dealing with nezek and tsar, other types of damage payment. The Gemara answers with a very simple answer. This source that says Naisenis Liorsheha, Omar Rabba, notice we're at the top line of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, Omar Rabba Begrusha. The woman was divorced. V'chein Amar Rav Nachman Begrusha. The woman was divorced, and therefore, of course, the payment is not going to be made to the husband nor to his heirs. At the point that she is divorced, so she becomes an independent entity, and money that's owed to her, if she's not around, will be paid to her heirs. Question. Amri, Grushonami tiflog bedeme vlodos. If you're going to set up the Tanaic source that we just read and Rabba and Rav Nachman explained that that Taneig source was dealing with a grusha, and that's why the Nezek and Tsar will be paid to her heirs. The husband is out of the picture. Why should there not be a split regarding the Dmei Vlados? In the source we read, the Dmei Vlados is paid to the man. If you're dealing with a grusha, so should she not be entitled to receive half of the Dmei Vlados? Omar Rav Papa, HaTorah zichsa Dmei Vlados LaBaal Afilu Bo Oleha Beznus. Rav Papa says the Torah grants Dmei Vlados to the husband, to the man, even if their relationship was one of znus, a harlotrous relationship. The Torah says that the man who impregnated the woman, he gets the Dmei Vlados. My time, what's the source for that? Omar Kro, Kasher Yoshis Olov Ba'al Ho'isha. And from this we learn that the Torah is focusing on the Bo'al, the one that impregnated her. He is the one that gets the Dmei Vlados. The Gemara is going to raise an issue. The Gemara itself is extremely terse, leaving out a tremendous amount of background information. So as we go on in the Gemara and read the next couple of lines, let us make it very clear that we'll have to learn the Rashi commentary that's relevant to this section of the Gemara, without which the words of the Gemara will be very, very hard to appreciate, to understand. The heart of this question is, why was it necessary for Rabba and Rav Nachman to set up the source that said that the Nezek and Tsar is going to be paid to her Yorshim? Why did they have to set it up as talking about a grusha? Even without a grusha, a man who was married to a woman and she was injured and then died, this source that denies the Nezek and Tsar payment to her husband can be understood a different way. Again, let's emphasize, without setting up the sources talking about a divorcee. What's that other way? So, let us return to a point that was mentioned on the on Daf Mem Beis Amud Beis, the third wide line. The point was mentioned by Reish Lakish that a husband is entitled to inherit his wife when it's money that she was in possession of, not roi, not outstanding payments. Where else in halacha do you see this concept? A distinction between roi versus musak. Roi, outstanding payments. Musak, something you are in possession of. By the way, don't take these things too literally. When we say possession of, there are areas of law where you are viewed as if you are in possession of, even without having actually collected. What is that other area where such terminology appears? It's in the area of a firstborn, a bechor, who's entitled to receive pi shnayim, twice as much as any other brother in an inheritance. We don't have to spend too much time in the details of Bechor Pishnayim, but that is a concept that maybe many of you are familiar with. The double portion to the firstborn. Double portion in his father's properties, in his father's assets. Imagine a man in his lifetime had loaned money. That loan becomes part of the man's, we'll say, capital value in so far as it's money that is going to be paid back. The loan that eventually will be paid back, if let us say the lender died, leaving several sons. When the money is paid back, will the firstborn, if there's a firstborn male child, will the firstborn son get a double portion of that repayment? On the one hand, the father had laid out the money. On the other hand, he died without having actually collected it. A bechor gets pishnayim by way of, let's say, general rule, in that which is muhsuk, the father is in possession of at the time of death. An outstanding loan, do we look at that as being something he's in possession of or not? Well, Rabbo and Rav Nachman in Maseches Bava Basra deal with this very topic. They actually argue, and they say, they argue on saying that it depends on what is being used as the means of payback of the loan. Rabbo will tell you there in Bava Basra that if the father, if the children, that is, collect the loan that was due to their father in terms of land, the land, well, the land was always there. It's a question of who's the possessor, who owns the land, but if land is collected, then the bechor will get a double portion of that land, which is the repayment of the loan. If, however, the repayment of that loan is in terms of cash, the cash being portables, that's not considered something that we can say the father was muhsuk in. And therefore, the bechor will not get pishnayim because the money collected, cash collection, is considered ro'i, not something muhsuk. Rav Nachman has the exact opposite approach to that. He says if the loan collection was in terms of cash, the father laid out cash, cash is being paid back, it's considered that that's in the possession of the father. Hence, the bechor will be entitled to a double portion of the cash payment of the loan, repayment of that loan. If, however, the collection of the loan is in terms of land, so they will not, the bechor will not be entitled to a double portion. That would be called ro'i. So when you look at Rabbah and Rav Nachman, they apply the concept of ro'i, each one will say respectively, one says that that cash is viewed as ro'i, the other one says that land is viewed as ro'i. Let's go back to the woman that was injured. She was injured, creating an obligation to pay nezek and tsar. She dies, what happens? Well, should it not depend on what the means of payment of the nezek and tsar are? If the means of payment is land, then the husband should be entitled to receive that. If the payment is in terms of cash, according to Rabbo, then the husband, that's called roi, the husband, then the source would make sense, so that the source would be set up according to Rabbo, where the payment for the nezek and tsar was in terms of cash. And that is where the husband doesn't get it, because that's roi. And the opposite with regard to Rav Nachman. So the question then boils down to, why do Rabbo and Rav Nachman at the top line of Mem Gimel Omen Aleph say that the source regarding the woman that was injured, that she was subsequently divorced? Even if she wasn't divorced, she was injured, creating a financial obligation to compensate for the nezek and tsar. She then dies. Who gets that money? Well, it would then depend on what the means of compensation happens to be. And yet, Rabbo and Rav Nachman did not explain it thusly. They said it was talking about grusha. And the question is, why? With all of that elaborate introduction, all of which you can find in the Rashi, let us now turn to the Gemara. Venukma, why not set it up, namely the source, on the bottom of Mem Beis Amud Beis, where the Mazik pays the Nezek and Tsar to her heirs, to her family, not to the husband. Set it up like this. LeRabah, according to Rabah, Kagon Shigavu Mos, money was used to compensate, was used to pay the Nezek and Tsar, and money, monies that are paid to someone that's no longer alive, that's called a payment that's roi, meaning it's anticipated, outstanding, and a husband does not collect that which was roi to his wife, only things that she was in possession of at the time of her death. Ulurav Nachman kagon shigavu karka. And according to Rav Nachman, the Nezek and Tsar that was going to be used to compensate for the compensation for the Nezek and Tsar, which was going to be paid, was paid in terms of karka. That's why it says your sheha. That's why the husband doesn't get it. The Omar Rabbah. This is now a reference to the Gemara we mentioned in Bava Basra, dealing with Pishnayim of a Bechor. Firstborn's entitled to a double portion of his father's property. The father had loaned money and died before collecting the money. Does the Bechor get Pishnayim of that repayment? Well, Gavu Karka Yeshlo. If the sons collected land as payment for the father's loan that he had extended, then Yeshlo, the Bechor, will get Pishnayim. That's not called Roy. A Bechor is not entitled to Roy, he's entitled to Muchzuk. Gavu Mo, Seinlo. If cash was used to pay back for that loan, then the Bechor will not get Pishnayim, because the Bechor doesn't get Pishnayim but Roy. And likewise, a husband doesn't inherit from his wife that which is called Roy. And a cash payment made after the party died, that's called roi. V'Rav Nachman Omar, Gavu Mos, Yeshlo. Yeshlo was again a reference to the Bechor in Bava Basra. If the collection of the loan was in terms of cash, then the Bechor would be entitled to Pishnayim. Gavu Karka, Ein Lo. If the collection of the loan was in terms of land, the Bechor does not get Pishnayim. And likewise, in our case, if the payment for the Nezek and Tsar was in terms of land, according to Rav Nachman, that would explain the source that says her Yorshim get it, because that would be called a payment that's roi. So just to repeat in a simplistic form, why does Rav and Rav Nachman not say that without getting into the Grusha explanation? Why not just say that it depends on how the payment was made? The Gemara responds, Amri, Hani, Mili, this machlokis Rav and Rav Nachman is b'nei ma'arova aliba de rabbonan. They were arguing within a particular Tanaic school of thought. Their argument is then appropriate for what the Gemara says aliba de rabbonan, according to the opinion of the rabbonan over there in Maseches Bava Basra. Ki ko'amri hacha, the discussion here is kerebi. We're interested in how to explain the source according to Rebbe. Rebbe happened to say that a Bechor gets pishnayim in all forms of let's say profit repayment that father was entitled to, without making any distinction between karka and mois. So that all forms of repayment in the case of Bava Basra would be considered muhsuk, not considered roi. And therefore we can't make the distinction between, it depends on what the collection was. Was it karka versus mois? Therefore, Rav and Rav Nachman, in order to explain why the Nezek and Tsar payment is, in defense of Reish Lakish, why is the Nezek and Tsar payment going to go to her heirs, to her family, that's only because she was divorced. had she not been divorced, so as Reish Lakish said earlier, the payments that are due to the woman that could have been made while she's alive, and Nezek and Sar certainly could have been made while she's alive, they will go to the husband inherits his wife. So that, just to review the last point, the reason that Rabba and Rav Nachman spoke in terms of Grusha and not in terms of this distinction between Kark and Mois is because the whole distinction between Kark and Mois was stated within a particular Tanaic mindset, the mindset of the Rabbanon there in Bava Basra. But as far as Rebbe over there in Bava Basra, who doesn't make that distinction, the only option that Rabba and Rav Nachman were left with in order to explain why Nezek and Sarah are going to go to are not going to be inherited by the husband, it's because she was divorced. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.